Okay, so we're back with Douglas Kearney for LA Lit 4, and we were talking about performativity as in a space, live performance, and performativity as a space on the page. And we were going to move to the poem At the Pink Teacup.
Yeah. This is a poem for one of my best friends, Kiata. It was written on a trip to New York. It was written about a trip to New York, where he lives. At the Pink Teacup. Kiata cuts sweet tea with talk. The room empty, but for us, the brother waiting, and love songs. Later he'll recall tanks from a stoop, carve a sonnet of the day no one was underground in New York, as if the sky needed holding up, and everyone came out to help. He'll pay for our food and we'll stare from the stoop as attachés commute past the swollen garbage bags flowering in dusk. But now he's talking about love. His tongue a knife he cools in free refills the menu says we shouldn't get. He's talking about what he wants. How he wishes it wouldn't burn his grandfather down. Or that brothers would remember how fickle the Bible is. And the brother at the pink teacup is refilling our glasses. He smiles, like it's the easiest thing in the world, and the menu looks stupid and petty. Later, Kiata will talk about gas masks and fruit stands, how all he could do was cuss the man who looked like some glass-eyed insect buying apples. You're scaring the kids, you fucking asshole! And how scared he is of what happens when everyone looks to the sky for messages and keeps everything sweet buried somewhere cold. New York will offer us bouquets in black plastic. The menus will fold. Commuters will buy apples and forget their gas masks. In the closet, right now, Kiata isn't talking about love. The knife is in his hand, cutting salmon croquettes. He doesn't want to burn his people down. But later, he'll talk about Sikh women beaten in Harlem, the bumper stickers, and flags flying past us as we watch brothers hoop in a cage. Before then, he'll talk about what brothers do once they find out. He is full of sweet, tea and pink flesh. The brothers full of sweat argue over fouls. The cage fence full of spectators like flies on the black garbage bags. The fruit stands full of apples, some bruised as the Sikh women and New York, full of bumper stickers, crawls back underground, scrambles for its love songs, Bibles, tanks, gas masks. Kiata wishes people would remember how fickle the flag is. And right now, he is talking about love. When the brother comes back with the pitcher, Kiata is through. Later, he will love the brothers. He pays now.
So, Doug, tell us a little secret about your process. Are there times when you compose orally first, or is it usually on a page? Or
that's a good question.
Where does speaking the poem fit into your composition process?
Oh, yeah.
Give us some hints.
Oh, okay. Give us some hints. Okay. There are some times where, you know, as people that have been listening to this very one-sided interview will guess I can babble on very well. I make lots of noise, and sometimes lines come up that way. The most typical process for me is to write and to repeat it out loud. So almost every sentence I've ever written has been repeated 3 or 4 times in its process of just making its way to a stanza. Meter is very important, and there are some poems that I, you know, truly scanning at a level of like, you know, this is going to be trochee and, you know, I'm, you know, whatever. But a lot of times you can do it by sound, and that's a way that working like a poem, like the first poem I did a poem with some sand. Once you've established the sort of aural pattern, you can then begin to realize, okay, well, this will fit. Oh, this word doesn't quite fit. And it's through that reading that I really that to me the poem really begins to breathe. This poem here uses a lot of enjambment, and that's a visual process for me in a lot of ways. I used to talk to, once I was talking to Tracy Morris, we still talk. Once I was talking to Tracy Morris, and I was asking, you know, how do you read enjambment? I mean, because it's one of those examples of a moment on the page that can be difficult to duplicate in the reading. And she says, I read them. It's the line breaks, but it's figuring out sort of the musical breath of the difference between a line that's end stopped, you know, with, that has a period, whether it's invisible or not. You'll see this poem doesn't have any terminal punctuation. Whether it's a natural sort of an end stop or whether it is enjambment, there's a different sort of musical sense of the timing. And so trying to duplicate that in the reading is an interesting sort of challenge. So like that starts off as I said, as a visual process, enjambment, which is something that I'm fascinated by, really, utterly, totally taken with the idea of enjambment. And then figuring out how that works in sound, what that suspension is, and how that really functions, becomes a part of that later reading experience. Because I read the poem throughout its composition, I don't often like rehearse poems. Like I don't, like in preparation for a reading, I don't pull out my poems and practice doing it, because I want to be able to come to it and see it in that moment. Once I start memorizing a poem, I lose interest in reading it because I'm no longer in dialogue with it at that point. Mm-hmm. At that point, I begin to use a musical metaphor versus a performance, a theatrical metaphor, where the music is, I'm going to play my favorite things, but if I come here today and I'm angry, it's going to sound different. It's still going to be my favorite things, but I'm going to change the tone of what my favorite things means, and that's important. Whereas in theater, the way I was understanding it at the time of the formulation of this metaphor, I know it can change from day to day, but if one performer changes, it really changes how all the other lines in relationship to that performer have to work. And so leaving the theatrical metaphor for me from memorization of this is the poem, this is how it is, rigid, 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 and beginning to realize that as I read it, it's a different experience than looking at it. You know, it's a different sort of experience, and so I should exploit what happens to that experience. That being said, I typically don't improvise in the middle of a poem. Like I don't suddenly decide, oh, well, I want to say 15 things here as opposed to 13. Yeah. I tend to stick to the script in that regard, but in that way, it is closer to that musical metaphor. This is going to be my favorite things, but it's going to have this different timbre. It's going to have this different stuff. Sure. So that's my process with that.
Wow. Okay, that's great. And also, you know, you were the only other poet in the program that we were both in together who carried around Louis Turco's new book of form.
Yes.
So let's dive in there.
Yes.
And give us some rhetoric about Louis Turco.
Oh, man.
Because I'm also a believer.
That book. I'm not going to get on the pulpit and say that every poet should be a formalist at any level. But I will say that Louis Turco's Book of Forms is this treasure trove of tools. It's this treasure trove of ideas, of approaches to writing a poem. You know, I've spoken to some people like, you know, if you can't think of anything to write, start with the form. And you know, that doesn't always work. I mean, I'm not gonna lie. I mean, you know, especially if you kind of sit down and go, well, the form I will begin with is Sestina, another form I mentioned earlier, but it's something I'm kind of obsessed with. Yes, I will start writing. That's a quick way to never write another poem in your life for some people. But it goes back to what I talked about earlier about exploiting it. I mean, you never know when, if not the actual form of, say, a villanelle would be what you need. I mean, you might actually one day really need a villanelle. And if not that actual form, you might need, like I was saying, the kind of psychological or even musical process that the villanelle simulates and stimulates. You know, so sometimes just getting the idea, like I was starting to think, I was like, ooh, you know, I want to write an exploded haiku. You know, how would that work? You know, if you elongate a haiku, I mean, are you losing what makes it a haiku? I mean, you know, it's that sudden realization that's part of the haiku. How far can you stretch a haiku before it loses that essential element? You know, and mm-hmm. is there a way to really see how long you could do that? You know, it's that tension, the tension within the work. And I think that forms are all about tension in a way that if you don't impose, if not a nonce form, I mean, like the poem with some sand is a nonce form. You know, the first four sections are a nonce form. If you don't ever impose that kind of thing on yourself, for me, I would find it very difficult to find tension within the work. Mm. You can have a contextual tension, and that's of course that exists. But with the actual putting, you know, the action of writing and putting, you know, the physical part of writing, which is putting the words on the page, that kind of tension, to me, is so vital to the contextual tension and the content tension that to me, I mean, form. I just think it's beautiful. I just think that these lovely, if nothing else, that these lovely constructions that. If for nothing else, you can just appreciate the complexity that goes into creating form. If you look at Greek poetry, the types of syllabic, you know, the work that's going in with the meter is incredible. You know, it's like stringing dactyls and trochee and anapest together in like one block. And that's not just sort of like me screwing around and writing. That is a form. You know, it's like, you know... Oh man, it's just you've tapped into something with that stuff. I'll be like, oh,
I know. Forms. I mean, yeah, beautiful. The way you talk about it is so enlightening. It makes me think for our listeners that this sounds very cerebral, but I want them to know, at least from my perspective, this mm-hmm. book is also, like we talked about, very emotional.
Thank you.
Very personal.
Thank you.
And so.
It's a sensual experience.
Yeah, it's very, everything's all tied up together, listeners. So right. Just so you know.
Well, and you know, the way that you talk about form creating attention, you do also not. This is not to say that there aren't poems where the content right. is is showing, you know, clear tensions mm-hmm. and registering not just like one clear tension, but at least two things, right?
Right, at least two. It's always at least two.
So, yeah, I mean, it hits on multiple different registers. And mm-hmm. I think that in a way, this is a great kind of lead up to the next poem, mm-hmm. Rallying, yeah, that you were going to read?
Oh, yes.
You probably have something to say about it before you read it, but yeah.
This is one that comes with a helpful little epigraph. For those that don't know, the Ku Klux Klan held a rally in St. Paul, Minnesota, back in 2001. It was at the state capitol, and the Ku Klux Klan, along with some members of the Aryan Nation and, you know, just a lot of white supremacy groups, held this rally, which is totally legal, you know, and protected. You know, they were allowed to demonstrate in front of the state capitol. And a lot of people in the arts community of Minneapolis were like, oh my God, how can that happen? We're going to go there. And what was fascinating for me about it was, you know, I'd been to protests, and I went to the Million Man March. I'd been to these huge organized things, but really seeing professional activists at work, and I hope people don't think I'm trying to be snide with that, but I mean, like, professional activists that know, okay, we can make noise, but we can't make certain amount of noise because then we're breaking the law, or we can't stand here. We can stand right here and back, and we can do whatever we want. But as long as we're not in here, they can't arrest anyone. So, I mean, it's this really just fascinating thing. And for people that, you know, can guess, Minneapolis and St. Paul, they are diverse, but they're still very white. Mm-hmm. So you had this community that was largely white people here protesting this stage, which was all white people. and there was this interesting tension going on. At the same time, within my own household, to my wife and I, my wife being from the South, and me having grown up on the West Coast, my image of the Ku Klux Klan is still embedded in all of the mythology of the Ku Klux Klan. You know, as you know, these figures that were just so other, you know, like just really other, like, you know, and yet, you know, she grew up possibly, you know, walking next to people who at night, you know, put on their little sheets and play games. So, you know, it was a different sort of relationship. So there were all these sort of tensions happening. And so the poem that I wrote about that is called Rallying. And that was on, and the rally was on August 25th, which was actually the same day as my last kind of show as a resident of Minneapolis. I was going to do a show that night. So that was kind of, I joked and called that my opening act.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is rallying. One, ghost stories. Tomorrow, white men pull skins from linens, drift the Mississippi, ghosts of magnolia trees. My wife imagines 30 dim rednecks, lame shotgun hounds leashed in frayed knots. I know better. The stairs before the Capitol, buried in waxen blossoms. Two, chicken. Picking through bones on my plate. Chicken. I plot escape routes. She argues we should be at the rally. Bones pile. My teeth are tearing dark meat. Why do you want to go? My tone bare, warning white only. Three, static. The car doors slam and foul things leave my throat. I shut off the pop rap radio station, embarrassed to hear another black man spout bullshit. Four, dares. No haunted house on my block. No haints waiting in basements. No windows to look through on dares. Stupid antics for eking scuffed manhood. Had there been, I would have hidden like one ducks torches, weaving between poplars. Big boys just dying. There ain't no ghosts, only folks in sheets. Five, rallying. Tonight, we approach the dark capital. Caught on a dead-end street, I change direction, hurling my lopsided terror to the headlights. We stare at it. The motor stutters. Nicole says we don't have to go tomorrow. I drive forward. A phantom dies under the wheel, a rolling drum. Six, jump, start. Morning, parking lot. I pay for being too careful. Headlights drained my car, a beaten black thing. I wave for help. I need to jump, start. To the passing white man or woman, it must be easy to believe I would pretend to borrow some power, just to steal, hurt, or worse. Lucky an older sister sees me pushing. Same thing happened to me, she says. The engine turns over. Seven, preparation. I've hidden something hard in a black umbrella in case of weather. Eight, race. The exits from home to St. Paul fall into the rear view. Every car with white passengers sears red streaks in my periphery as we go forward. It seems, so far, the Klan is winning. Nine, pot. Huge puppets entreat the crowd, pastors in a fevered dream. College kids clamor pots with hammers. The red shirts sickle among teamsters, trading flyers. About the green, a foam of whites scream at their skin, headed and hooded kin, demonstrating. Nicole points at what we should take with us. My camera blinks, holding their guns at hushed attention. National Guardsmen wait for us to remember how close we all are, how much we want from each other.
I think what I like about this piece is that, you know, it's rallying, and we don't really get to the rally until the very end, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you really get the sense of a poet and how this poet's mind works and thinks about, you know, any particular issue. I mean, in this case, this particular issue. But in the sections, you're coming at the issue from a multiplicity of different kind of like ways of thinking about it. You're hitting various different registers from just introducing the thing, ghost stories, you know, like, wasn't the Ku Klux Klan dead? I thought they didn't exist, right?
Okay.
You know, and the sheets and all that, of course, the more right. obvious thing, right?
Right.
You know, versus chicken, where you at the end say, like, you know, you're saying, like, your voice is registering white only, right?
Right.
This is what that's for. Like, we, you know, do we really want to go there?
Right.
You know, so, I mean, you even get the tension in various other places. I don't need to go through it all, but just the tension of, like, you know, I don't know if I really want to go to this thing. I mean, you know what's going to be there, right?
Like, yeah, you know.
But at the same time, the feeling that's something, you know, that you went and saw how much, you know, everybody wants from each other. And the end line there is really... Well, I'll say haunting, I guess.
Thank you.
Sorry.
No.
I mean,
you know,
I
appreciate
really,
a pun, you know.
and not really, right? I mean, it's very I don't know what else to call it, but it's very solid, you know, and it leaves the reader with a certain thing to take away from the poem, but at the same time you're kind of summing up in a way all the, you know, the real issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if you can talk to us about, or I shouldn't say the real issue, but yeah. a certain centralized kind of part of the issue. And I wonder if you can talk about that more, you know, how you're kind of in this poem and in other poems kind of, mm-hmm. and especially one that we're going to be reading soon, how you kind of, you really circle an issue. And I don't mean, you know, avoiding it, but mm-hmm. I mean, like, look, I want to write about this, and I'm going to write all and consider it from various different aspects.
Yeah. I think that you have the opportunity when you sit down to write something to learn something. This poem, when I thought of it, you know, there are sometimes, and you know, everybody in this room right now is a writer, sometimes we know how we want something to end, and sometimes we try to write towards that, and we'll either get there or we won't. And sometimes we have no idea how it's going to end, and it sort of presents itself in a way that allows us to learn something. And as I was writing this poem and really trying to distance myself from the easy outrage of, you know, the Klan is going to be, you know, the Klan is going to be allowed to protest here. And what I feel is like, well, that outrage should, I mean, do we even still have to talk about having that outrage? To me, it's ridiculous that, you know, you would have to write a poem that says I'm outraged about the Klan being there. I mean, it seems ridiculous. It seems that the need for that somebody would need to read that and go, oh, it's outrageous? That's ridiculous. Your desire to do it, not so much. But to me, I was like, okay. Working my way through this poem, there were certainly things that I had wanted to put in that just didn't really fit. There was this, one of the funniest things, and it's great because I get to say it in the world, even though it's not in the poem, is one of the gentlemen that was a member of the Klan was holding a sign that it read white superiority on it, but he was holding it upside down. And it was just sort of this moment where, you know, you're sitting there, you know, shaking the sign, like, and then it's like either, you know, that slow realization that you have, and it's like suddenly you say, maybe I should look down. I think my fly might be down. I mean, suddenly he like looks down and he saw this quick flip over of it. The other thing that was just hilarious was like the Klan obviously has like summer regalia. They have like mini robes so that they don't go all the way down to their feet. They're kind of like designed for like the hotter months so that they can, you know, show off their jeans. They go like to mid-thigh. And it was just sort of strange to see like this hood and this robe that kind of cut off. Like a kid had tied a t-shirt with a rope. But I mean, that kind of, I you know, maybe another poem will have those. But I didn't feel like that was what I wanted to get at here. I didn't, to me, they weren't a joke. Mm-hmm. You know, my wife was like, you know, there'll be 10 people there, you know, and there may be 30. I mean, you know, I completely thought it was going to look like early winter for all the robes, you know. But, you know, so I didn't want to make that part of it a joke. And what I and what I came to in this poem, in that last pot, was seeing this just range of people, and everybody there wanted something from somebody else. You know, you rally because you want people to hear you. Whether or not everybody's going to agree with what you say, you want them to hear you. One of the tactics was that we were going to stand there and make noise because that would prevent them from getting what they wanted. Mm-hmm. You know, but they wanted to be heard, and we were all there. So they had gotten something that they wanted. You know, we were all there to tell them we didn't want them there. So we had gotten something that we wanted. But it was all about, you know, there were all these different agendas. There were Marxists there. There were Green Party people there. I mean, you know, there were Teamsters there. So, I mean, all of these people, everybody wanting something from everybody else. The National Guard was in this building off to the side behind these glass doors. You wouldn't even notice them because the light was hitting in a certain way. But if you looked, you would see rows upon rows of National Guardsmen at attention. Mm-hmm. Ready for if any nonsense broke out, they were going to come in there and they were going to, you know, do something. You know, they wanted peace. They wanted, well, we hope that they wanted peace. We hope they weren't sitting there going, oh, somebody mess up. You know, they wanted there to be no problems. And we all wanted something. And that was what I really kind of realized from that. I mean, I completely disagree with what some of the people there wanted, you know, so I'm not trying to say that that makes it all the same, but that was what I came to in this poem, and that wasn't what I sat down thinking I was going to come up with. That I didn't think that was what was going to be revealed to me, that when I say come up with, that was going to be what I got out of the panning, you know, that realization. And at that point, I knew the poem was done. Mm-hmm. Anything after that would have been like DVD extra features, you know. Yeah, you know. So I got to, in this interview, I got to give out the DVD extra features, the upside down side and the mini skirt robe. But in this poem, I just couldn't. They didn't belong in there, and it's beautiful. I mean, I you guys write, and it's beautiful to be surprised by something that you've written, and it's a great pleasure. It's a great pleasure.
And also for the reader as well. Mm. For example, in the chicken section, you know, this is something I've thought about before, but perhaps others haven't, you know, this preference for white meat on chicken. You know, it doesn't just mean something in the poem.
Right.
You know, you take that home to dinner and you sit there and you think about that. Mm-hmm. I hope that you do anyway, or that people will. And so, you know, the strength of the metaphors resonates like that. So, I mean, this really might be a great way to introduce Bloom as Boom Sucka. But but maybe Matt wants to. Did you want to say anything else?
No. I think that it's been great having you here.
Thank you. It's been great being here.
I think we both really enjoyed the interview here. Hearing your thoughts on poetry and writing, I like it. And I think you're going to read one more poem, and that'll be it. And it's Dig Bloom is Boom Sucka.
It's my blaxploitation film poem. I had gotten very fed up with sort of the germ of this poem. Was I had gotten really fed up with sort of the turning the pimp figure into a hero. And I was hearing a lot in hip hop and just pop culture. And so I wanted to write, you know, this blaxploitation poem where, you know, I was going to take on a pimp and like, you know, and I was going to get the pimp. I was going to kill the pimp. And it, you know, it kind of exploded from there. But this is my attempt to write a poem, a blaxploitation film as a poem. And it's called Dig Bloom is Boom Sucka. Opening credits. At first, you think it's a flower, but it's an explosion. Ley lines deep in the earth where the power's at. Ley lines below the black lacquer street where the power's at. Back, fire mighty, mighty Broham. Drop the big bin, trash man. Spill the silver, dope fiend. Spill it all over the black lacquer street. You hear me? I see you. That's my eye under this hat. Come again, Broham? Let's walk now under this big hat. Storms slip off the rooftops, wash everything ripple red. Now drop the Big Ben, dig me done in ripple red. Dig me done in red pose under this big hat. Let's walk now. This shit for baby doll. Act one. At first they think I'm a flower, but I'm an explosion. In the end, gun smoke and Merlot. In the end, a white man in a river. In the end, trash bins in the green. In the end, all of the names involved. In between, kung fu. In between, naga hide. In between, sicky sicky. In between, baby doll, catch it. Why you catch it, baby doll? Why you always catch it, baby doll? This shit for baby doll. This shit, spill the silver delphine. A storm of spoons and forks. You hear? Diddy, the ley lines. Seedy, seedy city. Downtown billboards, uptown graffiti. Expect a deuce packed with axe handles, with ball bats, with switchblades. Expect blue deuce packed with jack vandals, with hard cats, with inmates. Deuce strut, deuce crawl, deuce stop. I see you. Kung fu! Ripple red. This shit for baby doll. Act two. At first, I thought she was flowers, but she was an explosion. Cooking in the kitchen. Tea kettle done. Old lady sweeping the stoop, sweeping the stoop. Tea kettle done. Sweeping the stoop. Tea kettle done. Cooking. Hear me? Oh, baby doll. It's all about you, baby doll. Talk sweet, look sweet. Talk mean, look mean. You the real deal, baby doll. No other for me. Some look like you, but ain't you. Some talk like you, but ain't you. Some act like you, but ain't you. Baby doll, a gunshot in a lover's lane. Baby doll, a guitar chord in a choir robe. Baby doll, a hot curve in a yellow fog. Baby doll, a ley line deep in a whirlpool. Baby doll, a gunshot. Baby doll, catch it and spill out Merlot on the naga hide. Why you always catch it, baby doll? You always catch it. Why you always catch it, baby doll? Where my heat? Baby doll, hot curve. Spill out the black lacquer streets. The power. Where my line? Hear me? Walk. The sun in the clotheslines like a red bath mat. Sun in the clotheslines playing a guitar chord. Where my heat? Come again, Broham. The trash man and the dope fiend dropping and spilling. Backfire and big hat. The black lacquer street. Where? This shit for baby doll. This shit for baby doll. Act three. At first they think it's flowers, but it's an explosion. Jungle on a skillet. Jungle jook slow on a skillet. Big jungle, little jungle jook. And hear me? Down below a pit. Junkie simmer, dancing dime tight. With white man's white lady. Stainless steel smoke. Nod the nod with white lady. Down below. Pull my coat to baby doll, the nod the, what you know about baby doll, down below a pit, the down below black lacquer, the pow, nod the nod, who hit baby doll, you always catch it, slow grind dime tight with white lady, junkie simmer on a skillet, jook faster, big little jook, hear me, flip the pot, silver spill, the nod, jook stop, what you know about baby doll, you always catch it, pit a flop, simmer still, junkie sleep, don't know jack about baby doll, why you always, jook with white lady, no jack about baby doll, white lady a gunshot in a black lacquer street, where the power? Smoke down a pit. White man's junkies don't know jack about baby doll. Where my heat? Back to black lacquer. The mighty Broham backfire. The spilling silver. The dropping bin. This shit for baby doll. Act four. At first, I thought they were flowers, but there was an explosion. Unbalanced coin op washer wobble. Squeegee on the glass. Squeal over street preach spiel. Sink drip to the pot lid. Wobble washer. Squeegee squeal spiel. Sink drip lid. Drip lid. Drip. Hear me? Red light on the black lacquer. Deep in. Red light. Wink and flop house chatter. Oh, oh. Cornerstone foxy. Vinyl brick house. Red light air. Got dollars in it. Dollars in the nylon bear. Read in the black. Oh, oh. Lacquer street. Deep in the earth. Where the power? Mac and his loud hat. His leopard loud hat. Red light air. Pockets. Foxy. What Mac know about baby doll? Don't know. Mac know Cornerstone foxy. Ain't baby doll, but it feel. Ain't baby doll, but it's sound. Max sell a vinyl brick house. Dig me, done. Oh, oh, the red light air, chatter. What Mac no got dollars in it? Ain't baby doll, dig me, done. Oh, oh, leopard loud squeal. The pot lid, flop house, and red light wink. What you know about dig me, wink, baby? Oh, oh, unbalanced coin op. A lover's lane, a gunshot in it. No, Merlot on the black lacquer street. Earth, this shit for baby doll, this shit kung fu, wobble, sink, Max Jack leopard hat on the black lacquer street, spiel, drip, 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 silver spill catching the red light wink, this shit for baby doll. Act 5. At first he thought I was flowers, but I was an explosion. Army of brohams, backfire mighty, mighty. Trash bin platoon drops a platoon of trash bins. Silver spill, waterfall of silver spill. Thousand fiends with wet hands spill this shit for baby doll. Why you always catch it? Mansion in the green hilltop, far from the black lacquer street. The power's at. Dig me, dun, and creep. That's my eye under the shadow. Let's walk and creep. Past the gate. Watchdogs in suits cock block the walk. Gorillas in suits. Expect kung fu. Ripple red. Suits bent funny. Moon a white man's face. Moon over mansion in the green. Let's walk up the hilltop. Spill, you hear me? Spill a river of silver fiends. Moon in the balcony behind lattice sky. Moon in the balcony. Lattice sky, lattice sky. What you know about baby doll? Moon in the balcony before a filigree drape. Moon in the balcony. Filigree drape, filigree drape. What you know about baby doll? Moon don't know jack about baby doll. Moon knows balcony. Dig me up the stairs. A platoon of trash bins. Hear me? This ship a baby doll. Backfire. In the end, gun smoke and Merlot. In the end, a white man in a river. In the end, trash bins in the green. In the end, all the names involved. Broham, drop the bin. Spill silver on the black lacquer street. Ley lines where the power's at. This shit for baby doll. Some talk like you, but ain't you. Some act like you, but ain't you. Closing credits. At first, we thought they were flowers. They were explosions. Hyman Munster as Hard Cats. Perry White as Jack's Vandals. Deal With It Ain'ts as Inmates. Not the as Junkies. Bye Baby as White Lady. Miss Udder as Cornerstone Foxy. H.E.R. as Vinyl Brick House. Jam Def as Mac. Them a.k.a. Dim as Watchdogs, Gorillas in Suits. Cannonballer as White Man. This shit, hear me, as Baby Doll. Douglas Kearney as The Poet.